All right, we're going to start here at the bottom of Yud Amud Bet with a sugya that really is almost a non sequitur. It has nothing to do with anything we've discussed in the Gemara until this point in time. It's really a major, it's a kodshim sugya. The reason that it's actually found in our Gemara is, we'll see at the end of today's daf, the Gemara is actually going to bring in our Mishnah as a proof or a discussion within the context of this discussion in kodshim. So the first statement of the Gemara, which is really going to set the tone for the whole Gemara, is a statement, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tmidim shel hutzrichu letzibur nifdim tmimim. Tmidim, every day in the Mikdash they brought two Tmidim, the Tamid shel Shachar and the Tamid shel Ben Arabayim. If they had excess Tmidim, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that the Tzibur did not need, all they had to do was redeem them. They simply podeh, meaning redeem them with money. The money then takes the kedusha off of the animal, and the animals are now chulin. And then they can either repurchase the animals for the following year's karbanot, or they could let the animals go and use the money towards issues or needs of hektish. The statement of Rabbi Yochanan is obviously very controversial, and that's what the Gemara is going to discuss here. And that's because in general, when it comes to kochim, when let's for instance talk about koche mizbeach, items that are designated to go on the mizbeach, the underlying assumption is that they will be used for the mizbeach. If we cannot use them for the mizbeach or are unable to use them for the mizbeach, then as far as the kochim are concerned, there are two paths that they can take. Generally, one path is at meta, that they have to be put to death, which is a specific process within kochim, how they're put to death. Or we wait, yiru ad shistavu. We wait until they get a blemish in them, when they are no longer able to be brought in the mizbeach. They are disqualified to be brought in the mizbeach. Once they are disqualified to be brought in the mizbeach, then we redeem them. We take that money towards hekdesh, and the animal goes out of hekdesh. Pesulei amigdashim, which we discussed earlier in the Masechta, actually, and as well as the end of Makot. Now, when we have it, those are the two normal paths of being podeh hekdesh. All of a sudden, Rabbi Yochanan comes up with a new idea that you have these tmidim, these animals that are designated towards being the tmidim, and the tzibur doesn't need them anymore. They're no longer needed for the mizbech. And then he says you can redeem them tmimim as they are in the state that they are, even though they're ro'u the mizbech, even though they're ready to go on the mizbech. Nevertheless, you can redeem them. And that yotiv rabba v'kamal al haishmaitata. Rabba was saying over this memra of Rabbi Yochanan, and then Amalei Rav Chista. Rav Chista asks him a question, or the basic question that makes his statement so controversial is, Manzayit lecha, ula Rabbi Yochanan Rabbich, who's going to listen to you and Rabbi Yochanan your Rebbe? V'chi kedushash behen lehechan halcha. Where did the kedusha on these animals all of a sudden disappear that you can go ahead and redeem them? Meaning this is against our general understanding of a kodshim, that you cannot just redeem any animal that is ra'ui l'mizbech, that's ready to go on the mizbech, that's already kodesh. You can't redeem it without some other factor coming into play over here. Where is that other factor? Where is the mum? Where is the item that allows us to redeem it? And that's what the question of Chista's question is. Kedusha shebehen heichan halcha. So amalei at lo tizbara. So you don't think, Rav Chista, that we sometimes don't worry about this issue of Kedusha, where did it go to? I mean that we have other instances, and I can show you, and I'm going to prove you, we have other instances in Kodshim where this takes place, where we, even though something is Kodesh, even though something is Ra'ui L'Mizbeach, nevertheless, we allow you to redeem it. So that's, what's that case? That's Vatanan. Motar HaKitoret, Maha Yusimba. The additional or the excess of the ketoret, what would they used to do with the excess of the ketoret? Now, truthfully, what this excess of the ketoret is, Rashi discusses over here, and Tosafot points out, for those that say the Pitom HaKetoret and Tanur Rabbanan every morning in Korbanot will know that there is a motar, there is a leftover amount of ketoret. Why is there a leftover ketoret? So according to Rashi, it has to do with the Kohen HaGadol. The Kohen HaGadol on Yom HaKippurim brought in a Meluch Chofnav, had a fistful of ketoret that he brought in. For that, they used to make up Shlosha Manim Yitzirim. They used to make up three extra portions that they used to put back into the grinder, the mill, in order to make them into very fine ketoret. And then they used to take that, the Kohen Gadol would take a fistful on Yom HaKippurim to use it. So when he had his fistful, obviously he's not going to take a full Shlosha Manim. They'd all be left over. And Rashi claims that's what the leftover ketoret is. But if you look at a braito that we say from Kritut, it's obvious that there's more than that that's left over each year. And that's, there are They used to make 365 portions of the Ketoret Keneged Yemei Achama, Keneged the days of the solar year. Now, in a typical lunar year, there are only 354 days, and therefore there was 11 portions left over in each year that are in excess. The solar calendar is in excess of the lunar calendar. Now, those eventually would be used towards the leap years, and when they're used towards the leap years, over the 19-year cycle, it would actually even out. But nevertheless, that means that on every year there was excess ketoret, not necessarily related to the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippurim, but also related to the fact that they used to make too much for every year, in a Shana Pshuta, any year that's not a leap year, they used to make an excess amount. Now, what do they do with this excess amount? They come to the end of the year. It was purchased with monies that were from the Trumat HaLishka, or from the Lishka. This was the money, the Chatzi Shekel, that was collected from every person in Bnei Israel, and then that monies were used towards purchasing all the Korbanei Tzibur, because that way all of Bnei Israel had a portion or a part in the Korbanot HaTzibur. One of the items that they purchased was the Ketoret. You get to the end of the year, and now the end of their fiscal year, the Beis Mikdash's fiscal year, which was Nisan, there comes the Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and then they need Ketoret for the upcoming year. In needing Ketoret for the upcoming year, they have to use monies from the new Truma, from the new a collection of the Chatzi Shekel for the Korbanot Tzibur Haba. So now you have leftover Ketoret from the previous year, and now you have monies that you want to use for the new year. So what do they do with this excess Ketoret? So Mayu Simba, Mafishim Schar HaMunayim, the word Mimena is misplaced over here, because it's not from it, but they were Mafishim Schar HaMunayim, they used to separate out the monies for the workmen, the craftsmen that worked on the Ketoret. The Mishnah in Yoma tells us that Beit Abitinas, there was a certain family, a certain group of individuals who were experts in making the Ketoret, and so they used to have to pay, they paid these individuals who made the Ketoret for the Mikdash. Now, Umechalinota al Ma'ot Umanim, then they redeem it onto the monies of the Umanim, Benodim Otal Umanim, then they give it to the Umanim as their Schar, Bischaram, V'chozim L'Koyimata Mitshuma Chadasha, and then they repurchase it from the new Truma, from the new taxation that was brought into the Mikdash to pay for the Korbanot Tzibur of the new year. Now Rashi explains that the case here, why they did this, was in order to be Tzanua Tfei, that it was a way to be Tzanua. Truthfully, they could have redeemed it directly, but they did this in a backhanded manner, so it didn't look like they were actually redeeming the Ketoret. So what did they used to do? So Rashi says that they owed money to these craftsmen. And in owing money to these craftsmen, they basically took money, and they were allowed to be paid out of the Truma Lishka. They were allowed to be paid out of the money of Hekdesh, because they were working for Hekdesh. So they used to hand the monies to these craftsmen, but they didn't want to hand it directly to them. They did it al yedei acher, which was mezake al yedei acherim, that they gave them a third party, one of the gizbarim, one of the treasures of the Mikdash, accepted the money on behalf of the umanim. That way the monies now, which were taken from Mikdash, are now chulin, and they were passed to this treasurer who is accepting them on behalf of the artisans, or the craftsmen. Then, after that was done, they used to, now the money is chulin, they would take that money, and they would purchase the excess ketoret with that money. They'd purchase the excess ketoret with that money. So now what happens is the Dusha on the Ketoret goes onto the money, is nitpas on the monies itself that they're using, and the Ketoret now is chulin. Now, with the Ketoret being chulin, they used to pay the artisans with that Ketoret. They used to give the craftsmen that Ketoret as their payment. Then, once that Ketoret was the craftsman payment, they didn't want that, they wanted money. So what they used to do, they used to take the Truma, monies from the new fiscal year of the Beit Mikdash, and they'd repurchase the Ketoret back for them. This Ketoret that's chulin, they'd repurchase back with the new monies, and that would be ra'oi, that would be useful for the upcoming year, or the new fiscal year in the Beit HaMikdash. So we did it in a convoluted way. As you can hear from Rashi, this was convoluted. We could have done it directly. What they could have simply done was handed monies to the Umanim, and that was then chulin. They could have purchased the Ketoret, or they could take other monies and be podeh it directly onto the money of chulin, and then exchanged it into the Truma Chadasha. But they did this in a convoluted manner, as Rashi says, because they wanted to do it hachatznia milta tvei v'lo lamachra l'chzor v'deknota dezila milta, rather than just selling it directly and then buying it right back, which would have been something that was a little bit of a zila milta, which he said it's degrading towards Hekdesh. Hekdesh doesn't get involved in business, doesn't involve in regular transactions. They did this in a backward or convoluted manner in order to make it seem like it was some sort of process of Hekdesh rather than a buying and selling in order to move the Ketoret from the previous year into the new year. Tosafot points out that maybe Rashi's understanding here isn't so clear, because Rashi suggests over here that they accepted the monies on behalf of the Umanim. So that means that the monies already belonged to the craftsmen, and then we take those monies and purchase Ketoret. Wait, if it's their money, we'd have to ask their permission in order to buy it. So based on what Rashi is suggesting, they would actually have to get permission from the Umanim to take the monies and then buy the Ketoret with it, and do this whole process. But Tosa says it doesn't seem to be that that's what took place over here, but rather the monies were taken out and were not necessarily paid or given to a third party on behalf of the Umanim. They were just separated out. Being separated out, that was enough. That monies that were separated were then used to purchase the Ketoret, and that went out to Chulin when they gave it to the or handed it to the Umanim. So Tosa just suggests that they didn't actually get a full kinyan on the monies that were, as Rashi suggests, but rather they were just designated, that they separated out those monies. Once they separated those monies, then that was enough to create the chulin aspect of those monies, and then they used those monies to purchase the Ketoret. Either way, now we have the understanding of how they used to do this excess Ketoret. Now, why is that important? That's important because here we have something that should have ended up on the Mizbeach, and yet we are redeeming it. So let's understand that better. The Gemara says, V'amai. How come you're allowed to do this type of redemption? Ask the simple question that Rav Chisda asked, which is, where did the Kedusha go? Why do you have a right to redeem something that is ra'ui to end up in the Mizbeach? Right? There is nothing wrong with this Ketoret. It's perfectly fine to go on the Mizbeach. And we know, again, the paths for redemption of Kochim involve, in cases, are really involved in cases where there's a blemish or something wrong that doesn't allow it to go on the Mizbeach anymore. So here I have an example of a case where I have an excess of something that should go on the Mizbeach, and I'm allowed to redeem it without ever anything changing about the Ketoret. So why can't I say the same thing about the Tmidim of the Tzibur? I should be allowed to redeem them without considering any other factors. That's Rabbah's point to Rav Chisda, and saying, listen, this is, I can show you that Rabbi Yochanan is not off or so far-fetched. So I'm like, Ketoret kamart? So Rav Chisda responds to him, you're talking about Ketoret? Shining the Ketoret, Kedushat Damim, who? Wait a minute, you're talking about the Kedushat of a Ketoret. Kedushat of Ketoret is different than the Kedushat of the Behemoth, the animals that are brought for the Tmidim. And that's because when it came to the Mikdash, there were two forms of Kedushat. The Gemara calls them as Kedushat Aguf and Kedushat Damim. Kedushat Damim is easy to understand. It's an item whose purpose is not to be used in the Mikdash itself, but rather it's for its monetary value. And its monetary value is being donated to the Mikdash. Now, there's something called Kedushat Aguf. Kedushat Aguf is an item which we expect to use in the service of the Mikdash. So, for instance, we could have this. If you have a Behemah Tmeya, you have a non-kosher animal that is donated toward the towards the Mikdash, it's clear that that non-kosher animal will never end up on the Mizbeach. So the intent of the owner of giving that to the Mikdash is for its monetary value. That means the Mikdash will eventually sell this item, have this item redeemed, and then the monetary value will be used towards the Mikdash. That's called Kedushat Damim. On the other hand, there's something called Kedushat HaGuf. Kedushat HaGuf is where something is made Hekdesh in order to be used in the Mikdash itself to function for some part of the service of the Mikdash. So here, in our instance, here we have the Tmidim, these animals that are ready to be, are set aside to be used on the Mizbeach, they have Kedushat HaGuf. We're not intending to use them for their monetary value, we're intending for them to be used on the Mizbeach and placed on the Mizbeach. So that's called Kedushat HaGuf. On the other hand, the Ketoret, now this is interesting, even though the Ketoret is going to end up on the Mizbeach, so you would have thought it's got Kedushat HaGuf, it's going on the Mizbeach, nevertheless, it's called Kedushat Damim. And that might be for certain items, not Behemoth, which end up directly on the Mizbeach, but certain items go through different stages, which is that in the original form, or when they are originally brought to Mikdash, they have Kedushat Damim, which means that they are designated to be used for the Mikdash purposes, but they're not yet Kadosh B'Kedushat HaGuf. They don't have that Kedusha. Now, Kedushat HaGuf can be established, for instance, with animals, through the pet, through discussion, by saying, simply, this item is now going to be designated to be used on the Mizbeach. The other way to get Kedushat HaGuf is actually to be placed in a Kli Sharet, to be placed in one of the vessels of the Mikdash, with the intent of using it in the Mikdash. So it might be, and we see this by Menachot and by the Lechem Apanim, the Shtei Lechem, items, certain bread, flour offerings that were brought in the Mikdash, that in their original state, when they are purchased originally, they have Kedushat Damim. or when they originally brought to the Mikdash, they have Kedushat Tamim. Once they are begin the process of being worked on, in order to be brought to the Mizbeach, they are entered or placed into Kli Sharet, they're placed into some utensil of the Mikdash, then they take on an additional level, what's called Kedushat Aguf. Then they become designated for the Mizbeach, and they become like that animal that we're going to bring to the Mizbeach. So that's Rav Chista's point here. Rav Chista says, you're bringing me a proof from Ketoret to Tmidim. Tmidim, the animals are designated for the Mizbeach, and they have Kedushat Aguf. Ketoret, maybe, and we'll see this in a second, maybe does reach a point of Kedushat Aguf. But in the original state of the Ketoret, when it's originally prepared, it only has Kedushat Tamim. Simply as Kedushat Tamim. Kedushat Tamim is a whole different parsha, it's a whole different party. The whole idea of Kedushat Tamim is that they will be redeemed, and they will be exchanged because they're being given for their monetary value, or their monetary value is what's designated towards Hekdesh. Yes, they can be, in this case, made into Kedushat Aguf, but they're not at that point. So if you can tell me Kedoret is redeemed, right, big deal. That doesn't tell me anything about the Tmidim. Now the response to Rav Chista is, Elamiata, Lo Tipasel B'Tvuyom. What does that mean? That there are certain psulim that only apply to Hekdesh that has Kedushat Aguf. Kedushat Aguf means that it's, again, designated to the Mizbech, it's going to be used on the Mizbech. Now it's subject to certain restrictions of Hekdesh dealing with Tumah. One of them is Tvuyom. Tvuyom is someone who has to go to the mikveh in order to become Tahor from their Tumah, and then they have to wait for the sun to set on that day. All mikveh tahara are done during the daytime. And when they are done during the daytime, we wait until the sun sets, which is called Herev Shemesh, in order for them to be fully tahor. The point in time, or the time between the time they go to the mikveh and the sun sets, that person is designated or called a tvul yom. They have gone to the mikveh, and they're waiting for the yom, they're waiting for the day to end. They have that. So we have, for instance, you would take a tamei mate, or you want to take a zava, or any tumah that involves requirement of going to the mikveh at the end. So on the seventh day, they go to the mikveh, and they only become tahor on the sunset on the seventh day. So in the time period between the time they went to the mikveh, the time that the sun sets, that is called a tvul yom. Tumah cheretz, which is for one day. Again, if a person has tumah cheretz, they go to the mikveh on that day, on the daytime, and when the sun sets, again, they become tahor. By a yoledet, by someone who gives birth, there's actually something called tvul yom aruch, where the woman actually has a large period of time, where it's whether it's 33 days or 66 days, where after she's gone to the mikveh, she's considered tvul yom until the sun sets on the 80th day or the 40th day. That's a unique circumstance, but there's tvul yom. Again, it's a level of tumah, it's a reduced level of tumah, but that reduced level of tumah can affect kodshim. So how can it become affect kodshim? It only affects kodshim that are kadosh b'kedushat aguf. Something that has inherent kedusha involved with it. Not something that's kadosh kedushat damim. Something that involves bedak abayit, that's simply for its monetary value. Since it doesn't have inherent kedusha in it, therefore the tumah of tvul yom is not going to affect it. But on the other hand, here, if you have something that's kadosh b'kedushat aguf, tvul yom affects it, the tumah of tumom. Someone who is tamei tvul yom, if they get involved with this hekdesh, they will make it tamei if they touch it. So now, let's test. The test for knowing whether something has Kedushat Aguf or Kedushat Adamim will be exactly this. Is it Pasul B'Tvul Yom or is it not Pasul B'Tvul Yom? If it's Kadosh B'Kedushat Adamim, then we don't worry about Tvul Yom at all. If it's Kadosh B'Kedushat Aguf, we do worry about Tvul Yom. So let us test out Ketoret and find out what it has. So that's what the Gemara says. El Me'ata Lo Tivasel B'Yot Tvul Yom. It shouldn't be Pasul with Tvul Yom. Alamo. Tanya, how could you say that? We have a brace that says, Notom b'machteshet. Once they place it into the mill or the grinder in order to crush the ktoret, nifselet b'tvul yom. Then already becomes posel b'tvul yom. Wait a minute. Oh my goodness, now we see that ktoret tvul yom, can make a tamei tvul yom. That's an indication that it's what? Tamei b'tumat aguf. So b'chitema, what do you want to say? Kol kedushat tamim mifselei b'tvul yom. What do you want to say? That this issue becoming pasul b'tvul yom, that is an issue that applies to all hekdesh, not to kedushat aguf. V'atran, we have another mishnah which makes it clear that tvul yom is something that has to do with kedushat aguf. Why? Haminachot, right? Any mincha, these are flower offerings that are brought in mizbech. Mo'alim behen. If you use them for personal purposes, when they were designated to be used in the Mikdash, then there's mi'ilah, there's a problem of misallocating Hekdesh. Mishehukdushu, right, that's from the point in time that they were already designated to be brought in the Mikdash. Kidshu bikli, Then, after that point in time where they were designated to be on the Mikdash, you actually placed them into a Kli Sharet. This is what we discussed before. That some sort of Kodesh, when it's brought, it can be elevated from Kedushat Tamim to Kedushat Aguf, when it's actually placed into a Kli Sharet, a utensil of the Mikdash. So that's what happened here. They were Kidshu B'Kli, they were placed into a utensil of the Mikdash. Hukshiru li pasel b'tvul yom, u'mechusar kipurim, u'belina. So once they're placed into the utensil of the Mikdash, they now enter a new realm of Kedusha, which is Kedushat HaGuf, and that allows them to begin Pasul with Tvuyom, someone who is waiting again for the sun to set after the Tumah, after they've gone to the Mikveh. Mechusar Kippurim is someone who has to bring a Korban to complete their process of Tara. That's something like a Zavah Gedola or a Mitzorah, that they have a Tumah. That Tumah is only removed when they bring a Korban on the eighth day. So that person who has already gone to the mikveh, had the sunset, they have something called Mechusar Kippurim, they're just missing bringing the kapara, the korbanot, that are required to make them tahor. So that individual also can be mitamei kochim, only kochim that are kadosh b'kdushat ha'kuf. But nevertheless, they can be mitamei kochim. So you have Tvuyom, Mechusar Kippurim, and Lina. Lina is that something that is kodesh, that has a kdusha, once it's put into service, it may not be left overnight in the mikdash. It has to be used on that day itself. So for instance, when a korban is shechted, it must be put on the Mizbeach that day, or the dam must be put on the Mizbeach that day itself, or into that night for the Ivarim. But if it's not done right away, then it's Pasul Belina. If it's left overnight, it automatically becomes Pasul from being left overnight. It must be taken care of and dealt with on that day itself. So that, also, that Pasul only comes to effect on items that are Kadosh, Bik, Dushat, Haguf. But how do they become Kadosh, Bik, Dushat? Well, they're placed into a utensil. So what do you see here? From this, Mishnah that we just brought down, you see that once they went into Kodesh B'Kli, Uchshuli Pasel, B'Tvuyom, U'mechusar Kippurim, U'velina, Kodesh B'Kli in. Only if they were put into a utensil of Kodesh. Lo Kodesh B'Kli, lo. But before that point in time where they only had Kedushat Damim, the Pasul of Tvuyom, and Mechusar Kippurim, and Lina did not apply to them. Elamai. So now what do you want to suggest? Now, Kedushat HaGufi. You want to suggest that the Torah really has Kedushat HaGuf and not Kedushat HaMim. All right, so let's look at it again. Another test for whether something does have Kedushat HaGuf. One test was that it becomes Pasul B'Tvuyom, that if B'Tvuyom touches it, it makes it Tamei or Pasul, and no longer can be used in Hekdesh. There's another test we just saw in this Mishnah here, is it Pasul B'Lina? We just discussed this, that if something's left overnight in the Mikdash, it becomes Pasul. So now, let's test Ketoret again. Is Ketoret Pasul B'Lina? If you leave the Ketoret overnight, does it become, or then faced with the problem of Lina? Because that's another test of whether something has Kadosh, Kedushat HaGuf. So that's what Gemara says now. Okay, you're suggesting that Ketoret is Kadosh, Kedushat HaGuf, because we have a Braita that tells us that when a Tevul Yom touches it, it's problematic. Well, what about Lina? It should also become Pasul with Lina, being left overnight. But we have another Mishnah that tells us, HaKometz. Kometz is the part of the Mincha that is separated from the Mincha that is placed on the Mizbeach. VeHaLivvona, right, the frankincense that is either with the Lechem HaPonim or is also placed on top of the Minachot that are brought. VeHaKtoret, this is what we're discussing over here. UMinchat Kohanim. Minchat Kohanim are Kalil LaHashem. Even though they have a Kometz taken away from them, both the Kometz and the Shiraim, the leftovers go on the Mizbeach. There's nothing left over of a Minchat Kohen. It goes Kalil, totally on the Mizbeach. Minchat Kohen Mashiach. Kohen Mashiach is that the Kohen each day used to bring a Chavitim. It's called the Chavitim of the Kohen Gadol, half in the morning, half in the afternoon. It's a special Mincha brought by the Kohen Gadol. It's also brought by a Kohen who went into service for the first time. Minchat Nisachim, the Mincha that comes along with every Korban, which is that we say, Yisaron Solet, and Shnei Esronim, and Shlosha Esronim, depending on the size of the animal, the mincha that comes along with them. Mo'alim behem mishu hukdushu. Once they become Kodesh, again, like we said before, they cannot be misappropriated. They are designated for Hekdesh, and if you use them for personal reasons, then you mo'el. You've actually violated the Hekdesh, and you're going to have to, there are certain ramifications that, both in paying back Hekdesh plus a fine, and in terms of bringing karbonot for problems of misappropriating the funds of Hekdesh. Kidshu B'Kli, so now we reach the point where they reach Kedushat HaGuf, means that if they were put into a Kli to make them Kodesh Kedushu, Hukshiru Li Pasel B'Tvuyom, U'B'Mechusar Kippurim, U'B'Lina. Right, so there, they become Pasul. At that point in time, they become then Pasul. That's Kedushat HaGuf, we said. One of the tests for Kedushat HaGuf is whether now you become Pasul B'Tvuyom, Mechusar Kippurim, and Lina. So Kedushu B'Kli in, Lo Kedushu B'Kli lo. So if they were Kadosh B'Kli, That's what makes them pasul b'lina. Lo kadosh b'kli, if they're not kadosh b'kli, lo, it doesn't work, then they don't become pasul b'lina. So over here, why before, when our Mishnah spoke about, the brisa that we brought before, spoke about the Torah going into the machteshet, when it was placed into the machteshet, all it says was it becomes pasul b'tful yom. How come it only said pasul b'tful yom and does not say pasul b'lina? So you see over here that there's a problem. We have a problem. What's the problem? Is that we have a test for Kedushat HaGuf. There are two parts to that test. I mean, again, the test is only in retrospect, when you know that that's what happens to something that has Kedushat HaGuf. Now we can test any item to see if it has those factors. When something becomes or is Kadosh Kedushat HaGuf, there are a number of three things that affect it. One is it's Pasul B'Tvul Yom. If Tvul Yom touches it, or a Mechusar Kippurim touches it, that Tumah affects it. Number three is that it's pasul b'lina. It cannot be left overnight in the mikdash. Now, if I go back to the brayta that we brought before, when the Torah is placed into the machteshet, into the grinder, or the crusher, in order to make it into the Torah, that's when it becomes kadosh. But there, the brayta said it only becomes kadosh to the fact that if it's full yom touches it, it becomes pasul. But what about lina? If it was really kadosh b'kdushat haguf, then it should also have a psul of lina. It should be now ready to be psul, psul at lina. So that if it's left over night in the mikdash, then it will be problematic. So you see from the Mishnah versus that Breita, we now have a problem. We have a ktoret which suggests that we have a ktoret that says that it's only psul b'tvul yom. And we have a Mishnah that tells us if you want to know what's kadosh b'kdushat haguf, it's also the effects that are things that can affect our tvul yom, mechusar kippurim, and lina. Where's lina for that ktoret? Now, it's true that in this Mishnah, ktoret is also mentioned. Ktoret was mentioned in the fact that it becomes pasul b'lina. The difference here, and this is what Rashi points out, is that we are talking about two different stages with the ktoret. The stage of the ktoret where it goes into the machteshet, right into this utensil that was making or for preparation of the ktoret. There's a later state in time where the ktoret is actually placed into a kli sharet. So the Mishnah over here is talking about the case where it's put into a kli sharet. At that point in time, it becomes kadosh kedushat haguf, and everybody agrees it's pasul b'tvul yom, mechusar kippurim, and lina. The question is at the earlier state in time, in the making of the ktoret, because that's what we're discussing here, we're discussing the excess ketoret, which at the end of the year they wanted to redeem. That excess ketoret had gone through the processing in the machteshet, but had never been placed yet in a kli sharet. So we wanted that point in time, when it goes into the machteshet, we want to know what the status of that ketoret is. Rav Chista argued that it's kadosh b'kedushat hadamim. We came back, Rabbah responded to him and says, well, how can it be kadosh b'kedushat hadamim? But once it goes through that process of machteshet, it now becomes pasul b'tvul yom. Pasul b'tvul yom is an indication that it has kadosh b'kedushat haguf. Now the Gemara comes back and suggests, wait a minute, how could you say that? How could you say it's kadosh b'kedushat haguf? It's missing another factor. What's that factor? It's not pasul b'lina. So how do you explain Ketoret? Ketoret seems to be in this semi-quasi state between Kedushat Damim, where Kedushat Damim, Tvul Yom doesn't affect it, Lina doesn't affect it. That would be Kedushat Damim, Kedushat Guf, which is affected by both Tvul Yom and by Lina. Now we have Ketoret, which seems to sit in the middle. It's affected by Tvul Yom, not affected by Lina. So that should be a proof that it's really not Kadosh, big Kedushat Guf. And how can you bring a proof from Ketoret to the Tmidim, to the case of the animals that are roided to go on the Mizbeach? So the Gemara answers up, wait a minute, that's not a problem. Why? Malay lino kamart? You're discussing about lino overnight? Shanik toret, hol b'tzurata b'chol shana kula. The Rashi points out over here, what does that mean, tzurata b'chol shana kula? That it never goes bad. Meaning that ktoret is not something, lino, leaving things overnight in the mikdash is problematic for items that deteriorate, items that after, for instance, a korban is shechted, and then it's been waiting to go on the mizbeach, or the dam is waiting for the mizbeach, if you left it over a period of time, the actual item would deteriorate or spoil, and therefore it's pasul b'lina. Ktoret is almost, in a sense, everlasting. It doesn't have a side to it or a part of it that does spoil, and therefore it's not going to ever be pasul b'lina. That's the way Rashi explains it over here. So now, if that's the case, that it never spoils, then you have to answer up why when it's that we have a Mishnah that says Ketoret is pasul b'lina. So Rashi makes a point over here. He says, "Umio mishakotcha b'kli," meaning that once it's placed into utensil of the Mikdash, of kli sharet, likarev, to be placed in Mizbeach, gozur barabanan, psul lina. This is a rabbinic institution of lina for the Ketoret. Dilma atalech shuri b'shara mitkotchim b'kli. In order to not mix it up with other items that are put into a utensil that do have a problem of lina. So what the Gemara's answer here is, wait, Ketoret is Kadosh B'Kedushat HaGuf. And if it's Kadosh B'Kedushat HaGuf, then Rabbi has a good point that it's a proof that we don't say Le'echan Kedusha HaLcha, and therefore I have a proof to you that the same thing that we're doing by the Tmidim is done by the Ketoret. If it is Kadosh B'Kedushat HaGuf, we have the test before. What does Kadosh B'Kedushat HaGuf mean? Number one, it means that it should be Pasul B'Tvul Yom, and it should be Pasul B'Lina. So that, where it says, I have a braisa that tells me it is pasul b'tvul yom once it goes into machteshet, so that I'm taking care of. Psul lina, you have a good question about. Lina does not apply to the ktoret. Because lina, the ktoret is not something that spoils. Since it's not something that spoils, it doesn't have a psul lina in the migdash. Well, if it doesn't have a psul lina, I have a mishnah that says it does have a psul lina. Rashi points out first, explains to us, that's because it was placed into a klisharet, a utensil used by the migdash. Once it's placed into the utensil used by the migdash, that's what allows it to become pasul b'lina midera. Banan. That's only a rabbinic institution, so it doesn't get mixed up with other items that do spoil and that do need or do have a problem of lina. So that's only rabbinic in nature. So the fact is, it is kaddish b'dusha guf. Lina doesn't apply at all to ktoret. When it does apply, that's only from a rabbinic standpoint. So now we have a proof or a parallel between ktoret and the tmidim, and both of them are redeemed. So Rabbi says, why are you, Rav Chista, so worried about these tmidim, or the statement of my Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan? Nevertheless, I have a exact same case by the ketoret. How do you explain the ketoret? If the ketoret can be done that way, why can't the tmidim be done that way? Tosfos happens to disagree with Rashi as to why the ketoret does not have lina. Rashi says because it never spoils. And therefore, when it does become posul b'lina, Rashi says it's only a din derabbanan, it's a rabbinic institution. Tosafot, on the other hand, says no. The reason that ketoret does not become posul b'lina is because the way that it's made, or the mitzvah of how you're supposed to make it. The mitzvah of ketoret is to make all of the ketoret for the whole year at the beginning of the year. Well, if you're going to make it all at the beginning of the year, then obviously it's not posul b'lina, because otherwise how could you do that? If the Torah is instructing us, or the mitzvah is to do it all in one shot at the beginning of the year, it's clear that it's not posul b'lina. But because of that, Tosfos says that this mishnah that says when it's placed into a kli sharet, a utensil of a hekdesh, and then it's left overnight as a psul lina, Tosfos says that might be a psul lina midoraitza from the Torah. As opposed to Rashi, who says that ktoret is mufka from the parsha of lina, because it never spoils, and therefore anytime we say lina by ktoret, it means midorabanan. Tosfos says, no, the reason that ktoret doesn't have an issue of lina when it's put into machteshet or prepared at the beginning of the year is because that's the way it's supposed to be prepared. The only way you can prepare it at the beginning of the year is if it's not posul b'lina. But that doesn't mean that there is no such concept as lina by ktoret. And therefore, it also suggests, well, once it enters into, or once it's been part of it, put into a kli sharet, when the mishnah says it's posul b'lina, that's posul b'lina midoraisa from the Torah. Now the Gemara continues and says, mikom makom kasha. In the end, we still have a question. What's that? V'chi k'dusha sh'ben heichan halcha. Alright, I accept the fact that I have ketoret that is done this way, and tmidim are done this way. But I still have the same question. I mean, the question that Rav Chista posed in the beginning is, where did the kedusha go that all of a sudden that you can redeem them? You still have to deal with this issue or this problem. The Gemara answers, and this is Amar Rabba, Leiv Beitin Matna Elehem. Im Hitzruchu, Hitzruchu, Im Lav, Yudud Mehem. So Rabba says that we have a general principle. When they are purchased with the monies of the Trumat Lishka, when they purchased the monies of the Tzibur that were brought from the Machatzita Shekel to purchase these items, they knew they were possibly purchasing in excess. By the Torah, they knew it for sure. By the Tmidim also, they might have known that they were purchasing in excess. And therefore, at the time of the purchase, there's a built-in condition into the purchase, which is that the Beis Din is Matne Alehem, has a conditional buy. They're making a conditional purchase, which is, Im hutzruchu, if they are needed to use for the tzibur, then they are kadosh b'kedushat haguf. The monies that are taken from the shumat lishka make them kadosh b'kedushat haguf, and they go on the mizbeach. Vim lav, if not yudud mehem. If not, then the intent when they were purchased was not to use them on mizbeach, but simply to be in exchange for monies. Meaning taking the money of the shumat lishka and placing it on them, and then we can take them as a monetary item and then sell them and use those monies again or redeem them. So that's the answer. The answer, or where this kedusha went, is you're right. The kedusha of the guf disappeared. And you have to explain how the kedusha of the guf disappeared. The way the kedusha of the guf disappears normally is either, again, it gets a mum, it gets a blemish, or again, meita, it's put to death. And then, of course, in that case, there's nothing to do with the animal. But in our case, where you redeem them as being solid items that are kaddish with kedushat guf, whether it's the ktoret or whether it's the tmidim over here, when you're being kaddish, then where did the kedushat guf disappear to? And that's Rabba's answer. Rabba's answer is, in Wachanami, the kedushat guf does disappear, but that's because it never came, it never existed. Why did it never exist? Because at the time of purchase, Beis Din makes a stipulated condition in the purchase, that is, if this is needed for the tzibur, then it has kadosh b'kedushat haguf. If it's not needed for the tzibur, the kedushat haguf never is chal, never takes place on this item, or never affects this item, and therefore it remains kadosh b'kedushat hadamim, and that's why we can redeem it. That's why the kedushah really never came, or never was affected this item, and since it never affected this item, that's why we can redeem it. Samar le Abaye, v'aha marhu domar, hikdish zachar le damav, kadosh k'dushat haguf. Wait, Rabba, is this you, Lishitato? Abai is going to challenge him and say, wait a minute, aren't you the one who said a person who goes ahead and takes a good male animal that could end up in the Mizbeach and says, listen, I don't want to give this to the Mizbeach. Rather, I'd like to be designated for its monetary value. He says, you know what Rabba said? Rabba says, too bad. That you can't do. Because it's Kadosh B'Kedushat HaGuf automatically. If it's Ra'ui to go on the Mizbeach, and you're Makdish it, it goes to the best Kedusha, the highest form of Kedusha that could be possible. That's Kedushat HaGuf. And it doesn't matter that you said you wanted it for its monetary value. This item is Ra'ui the Mizbeach, and therefore it ends up with Kedushat HaGuf whether you like it or not. And therefore you can't make it Kadosh Kedushat Tamim, because it's Ra'ui the Mizbeach. So by saying, wait a minute, how could you, Rabba, make such a suggestion that the Beis Din is matneh, makes a condition at the beginning of the year that, well, some of these items will be kadosh kedushat guf, some of them will be kedushat damim, it doesn't work according to you. Something that's ra'ui l'mizbeach never can have kedushat damim. It always has kedushat haguf. So it says, lo kasha, had amar l'dmei ola, had amar l'dmei nisachim. That depends what you designated it for. So if you say, for instance, a person comes and takes their animal and they say, listen, I want this animal to be used for its monetary value to be used for olot in the Mikdash. This is a perfectly good animal that could have ended up on the Mizbeach. In that case, Rabba says, doesn't work. Since it can end up on the Mizbeach, that's what the Kedusha is, and that's how the Kedusha is designated or affects this animal. It becomes Kedusha Kedusha the Guf, whether you like it or not. Now then, if you designate the animal for something that it otherwise could not be used itself, then that can remain in Kedushat Tamim. That's, for instance, Nisachim. You want to use it for the libations or the extras that are brought along with the Karbanot. So I say, I want the value of this animal to be used towards Nisachim, or to be brought as a Nesach, a libation in the Mikdash. In that case, your Kedushat Tamim works. Why? Because the animal itself can't be used as the Nesach. Since it can't be used as the Nesach, it makes sense that you're designating it for its monetary value. So that's the difference over here. An animal, when you're talking about something whose value is going to be used towards exactly what the animal itself could be used, in that case it is Kadosh Kedushat HaGuf, whether you like it or not. Because we're not going to allow you to give its monetary value when the animal itself could be ready to go. Then if you designate the animal for something it itself can't do, for instance, Nisachim, in that case we'll say that it's Kadosh Kedushat Damim, even though the animal itself could have ended up on the Mizbeach. So based on that, now what are we doing in our case? In our case here, with Beis Din makes a t'nai on the animals, well then, the animals that are ra'ui the Mizbeach, and are going to end up in the Mizbeach, then we have Kadosh Kedushat HaGuf. What about the excess animals? What are we going to do with the monies that are left over from these excess animals? Well, the monies from these excess animals then go back into the Lishka, and they're used for items other than bringing Karbanot on the Mizbeach. And so therefore, this is as designated. When Beis Din makes that t'nai, or that condition, that the animals that are in excess will be used for monetary means of Hekdesh, those monetary means don't mean putting Karbanot on the Mizbeach. They're used for fixing up the Mikdash, for Bedek HaBayit, fixing up Yerushalayim. The Mishnayot and Shkalim have a list of items that they used to use for the Motar Lishka, what was left over from the Lishka, or the Trumata Lishka, the Motar Trumata Lishka, what they did with these items. So therefore, it'll be a case like Dmei Nesachim. It's like the case where you designate an animal for something that couldn't otherwise be used. So Tavir, when Beit Din is Matneh, gives that condition, they're designating them for their monetary value, not for their monetary value then to be put on Mizbeach, but rather for their monetary value for something else that's needed for Ektesh, and therefore it works, according to Rabba. So then, Eitvei Abai, Abai has another question. Par v'sa'ir sh'yom ha'kippurim sh'avdu v'hifrish acherim tachtehem. You have a par and sa'ir of Yom Kippurim, that's the par that the Kohen Gadol brings on Yom Kippur, and the sa'ir anaseh bifnim, the sa'ir that's in the internal code inside the Kodesh HaKodashim, its blood is sprinkled as well as on the Kodesh and the Mizbeach Zahav. We discussed them until this point in Shavuot, this year, what they're mechaper on. So these items, these two, Shavdu, they were lost. V'ifrish acherim tachteim, and then they replaced them. After they got lost, they replaced them. And then, V'chein Siri Avodah Zarah Shavdu. Siri Avodah Zarah is from Parshat Shlach. Again, we've discussed this a couple of times. That in Parshat Shlach, there's a special Parsha for Avodah Zarah. It applies to both to an individual. An individual normally brings a chatat for shogeg by any other chait that is chayav karet. But avodah zarah, he has a special karban of the, he has to bring a sirah, not a kizba when it comes to avodah zarah. The same is true of a tzibur. The tzibur, where if it makes a mistake, meaning beit din, hagadol, paskins, something that is wrong, And then all the tzibur goes out, or rova tzibur goes out and does that. We're going to get to this in Huriot when we discuss it. There's something called par he'alam davar shel tzibur. Then the tzibur brings a single korban, or the machlok is there in Huriot, whether each shevet brings its own korban, or one korban for the whole Klal Yisrael. But there's a par he'alam tzibur that the Beit Din has to bring this par because of the sin of the rova tzibur that did on, based on their decision, they have to bring this korban in order to rectify the situation. Now, if that psak halacha was about something in Avodah Zarah, then actually is a different korban that is brought. We actually bring a se'ir, the se'ir of the tzibur, the par le'olah, and then the se'ir l'chatat. That se'ir l'chatat is also brought into the kodesh. What is done with the par helam davar shel tzibur and the se'ir of avodah zarah, the blood is sprinkled on the parochet and on the mizbeach hazahav. It doesn't go into the kodesh kodashim, but it's in the kodesh and the mizbeach hapnimi, the mizbeach hazahav. So these three items, if they were lost, again, the par and seir of Yom Kippur, or the seir of Avodah Zarah, they were lost, and then they got replacements. Kulan yamutu divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that they all are put to death. I mean that since you have something that is now kadosh b'kdushat haguf, and since it's kadosh b'kdushat haguf, we don't need them anymore. We can't let the kdushat just doesn't disappear. Nothing happens to it. So since they were designated for Hekdesh, we let them, and they go out, and they're actually led to graze and die. And then they die. So Rashi points out here, why is this? This is different. These aren't similar to the sirim of the regalim. They're not brought in this regal, you can bring them in a different regal, you can use them at another time. When it comes to these three items, you're not going to be able to use them until Yom Kippur for the next year. And then it's a new year, and they were brought from the old Shumat Alishka. We said that the fiscal year of the Beit HaMikdash starts in Nisan, and you have to use the new monies for the Karbanei Tzibur for anything of that year. These animals were purchased with the old monies of the Tzibur, and therefore you can't bring them in the following Yom HaKippurim, because it'll be too late. It'll be in the new fiscal year of the Mikdash, and you need to bring that for the new Shumat Alishka. So therefore these animals are not useful, if they're not useful, because they can't be brought in any other time. Then Yamutu, that is the din of Rabbi Yehuda. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi's opinion. Rashi says the reason that over here that the Sirim, Asir of Yom Kippur and the Pyre of Yom Kippur, we don't use again is because then this year will pass and they'll be in the new fiscal year. Tosfos says that's not what the Gemara says in other places. The reason we don't keep them around is because of Takala. We're worried about holding an animal for a whole year. We don't like keeping kodshim animals around for a year because things could go wrong. People could misuse them. They could misappropriate it. We just don't want that happening. So therefore we meita. Therefore we put them to death over here. Not because of the year problem, but simply because we don't want a Takala to happen. That's why we don't hold them over for a year. V'lazav Rabbi Shimon Omrim, on the other hand, Yeru ad shistavu. No, we let them go and graze until they get a blemish. V'machru v'yipul d'mehem l'nidava. And then their monies, the monies that are they're sold for their value, that value will take and be placed on the davash en chatat etzibur meita. That there are five chataot. Again, we're going to discuss this in Kochim. We'll discuss it in Horiot as well. The idea that there are five, this is Alocha L'Moshe Misinai, that there are five types of chataot that are put to death or sent out to die. Konsino Ton Kippa. One of those is a chatat she'nevda, that was lost. Chatat that was lost and replaced. The replaced, the chatat, that the new chatat is brought in Mizbech. The old one is put to death. But that's only true of the chataot of Yechidim. That's only true of individuals who are bringing chataot. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon say that it's not true of the chataot of the tzibur. Comes to a chatat of the whole tzibur, it never is put to death. It's not under that halacha l'moshe misinai of the chamesh chatatot meitot. And therefore, what do you do with it? You let it graze until it gets a blemish. You sell it for its value. And that value is given as nidava, as a donation to the mikdash. And what do they do with that? They use that monies to bring when the mizbeach is empty, when it's the long days, whether it's the summer long days, or times when the mizbeach doesn't have anything on it. They used to purchase additional olot to always have something going on the mizbeach, always have something being mukrav to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So that's what the monies will be used for. Vamaya, but he says, look, according to Yerubah, why don't we say, Beit Din Matne Aleihem? So why don't we just say that it's the Lev Beit Din is Matne Aleihem? If you say that every time Beit Din purchases something for the Tzibur, we have the Tzibur, there's an automatic condition built into it that if it's used for the Tzibur or the purpose that it was bought for, then good, it's Kadosh B'Kedushat Guf. If it's not used for what the Tzibur intended, then it's only Kadosh B'Kedushat Damim. So let's say the same thing over here. The parents a year of Yom Kippur, the Sira of the Zara were purchased with monies of the Tzibur, and they were intended to be used. But in the end, they don't get used. Well, if they don't get used for their intended purpose, they should be Kadosh B'Kedushat Damim, and you should be able to redeem them on the spot. Who needs to, first of all, Meita, for sure not, and then, why should you be able to redeem, why you have to wait until they get a blemish to redeem them? You should be able to redeem them right away, according to your logic, Rabbah. So, our answer is up. Avudim Kamart, Wait, lost animals you're talking about? That's a different case. Why? Avudim de lo shkicha, shani avudim de lo shkicha. That's not a common case. I mean, Beis Din is only matna. This condition that Beis Din makes is only in normal situations. Normal situations where we're probably going to end up with an excess, Beis Din makes this condition. In a situation where Beis Din never foresaw something like this happening, then they don't make such a condition. Over here, lost animals of Hekdesh, that seems something very unlikely, right, or implausible. Since it's unlikely or implausible, therefore, Beis Din did not get involved or did not make conditions in this case. Rashi says it's unlikely to happen because it's not so chashuv. It's a small amount of money. It happens on a rare occasion. And there, Beis Din didn't think about those situations. Now then, Tosfos points out that maybe the issue here of why it's not so common, or it's lo shchiche, is because they only happen very infrequently. Meaning that they happen once a year. These korbanot are not something that is happening every year on a continuous basis. These are things that happen once a year. And therefore, since they happen once a year, they're not considered shchiach at all. And Seir Avodah Zarah also, something that happens on a very, very rare occasion. And that's why they're called lo shchiach. Not that because they're small monetary amounts or because they're insignificant that Beis Din doesn't deal with them, but they're just infrequent. That's enough of a reason to say that the Beis Din is not maneh, does not bring such a condition in here. Where it says, Vehari para de lo shchicha. What about the para duma? Para duma is a case that's less shchiach, doesn't happen frequently. V'tanya, we have a braisa, para niftet al kol psul sheba. The para can be redeemed for any type of problem that happens in it. Any psul, anything goes wrong with the para, you can redeem it on the spot. Meita, if it dies, tifteh, you can redeem it. Nishchata, if you shecht it and it's found to be a treif or something wrong with it, tifteh, you're allowed to, it can be redeemed. Matzah, acheret na'eh meno, you found something better than it, another para duma, again, tifteh, it should be able to, it's allowed to be redeemed. Shachta, gabi marachta, they shechted it on the pyre where they're about to burn the para duma. In lap diyalo meat, you're no longer allowed to redeem it anymore. So Mara says, oh, so now you have a para where something went wrong with it, and we said before that, oh, Beis Din is matneh on certain items that if they something goes wrong, that the kedushat damim, if they're in excess, the kedushat damim and not kedushat aguf. Now we have para duma, which is a case of infrequently, happens only, as Rashi points out, there were seven of them over the Mikdash Rishon and Sheni. So if it's happened so infrequently, Beis Din probably is not maneh. Yet over here we say anything that goes wrong with the para duma, you're allowed to redeem it. Sounds like there is some sort of condition in here. Marseh, shani para, de kachi betakavaiti. You're talking about para. Para is not a karban. The para duma is not even brought into the Mikdash. It's burnt, it's shechted up on Har HaZeitim. It's done mul, the Beit HaMikdash, opposite, facing the Mikdash, but it's not something that's brought into the Mikdash. The para duma only has kedushat damim. It doesn't have the level of kedusha, like kedushat aguf that we're discussing in these other karbanot. That has something like kedushat damim. Kedushat damim is a different category altogether. Kedushat damim, you can redeem. That's why we can redeem it. It's no problem whatsoever. Go ahead and redeem it when it's kedushat damim. So therefore, we have a difference in these cases. We have the cases of the ketoret and the tamid. Those are allowed to be redeemed because lev beit nin maneh alehem. We have the cases of the Parasayir and Yom Kippur and the Sirei Avodah Zarah. Over there, we should have had Leib Beit Min Matneh Alehem, but they're infrequent. Since they're infrequent and they're avudim, you're talking about cases of being lost, that Beis Din did deal with either because the monetary amount is insignificant or not considerable, or because it's so infrequent. It happens only in rare occasions that Beis Din doesn't really consider those cases. Ah, Paraduma. Paradama is infrequent, and yet it still has this ability to be redeemed. That the Gemara says, no problem, you can redeem it because it's Kedushat Tamim. It's not even the category of where you'd have a problem of redeeming it. And you have to say, Kedushat Heichan Alcha, where did it go? Because it's not Kaddish, but Kedushat Aguf. So therefore, you're allowed to redeem it all the way through. Ah, why aren't you allowed to redeem it? Once it was Shechted Agabei Marachta, so Rashi says, because of that, Machash Nasit Be'achsher. Once it reaches the point that it's done properly all the way until that point, Gnaihu Lo Tzialu Chulin. At that point in time, it's inappropriate to redeem it anymore. Technically, it could have been redeemed. We don't redeem it because of a technical reason that it's just not appropriate anymore. So now what do you want to suggest? You want to suggest that the Para Duma is Kushrat Damim. Well, there's a requirement. Whenever you want to redeem something from Hekdesh, we don't just assume that we know the value, that we can just redeem it. It requires something called Hamadav Aracha. The item has to be stood up and assessed by a panel of experts of Kohanim who can tell us what the value of this item is in order that Hekdesh gets the proper value out of it. So if you have Kedushat Damim, we're going to acquire Hamadav Aracha. So what's the problem? So this is what the Gemara says. Iochi Meito Nishchoto Tifteh. You want to suggest that the Braisa, the Tosefta, tells us that if he dies or is shechted, you can redeem it. you needed to be stood up and assessed. Now, part of Hamada Varacha assessment is Hamada, to actually stand the item up in order to assess it. You can only stand something up if it's alive. So therefore, in general, we say that there's no redemption of items of Hekdesh once they are dead, because you can't have Hamada Varacha. So if you want to suggest over here that Parah Adumah is Kshat Damim, and you need to redeem it now at this point in time for its monetary value, then you will require Hamada Varacha. Hamada Varacha can't be done. It says, Hamani Rabbi Shimon he... Now, the author of this verse says, Rabbi Shimon, Damar Kodshim Mizbeach Hayu B'chlal Hamada V'Racha. That when it comes to Hamada V'Racha, the assessment, when it comes to assessing the value of Hekdesh, that only applies to something that was Kodesh Kedushat HaGuf. Got a blemish, got a muminet, and now we have to assess the value. That's the case. Kodshim Bedek Abayit, when it comes to items that are given to the for their monetary value to Hekdesh, Lo Hayu B'chlal Hamada V'Racha. They don't require Hamada V'Racha. So it's Kodshei Beirach HaBayit, it's according to Rabbi Shimon, and therefore we don't need any assessment of the value by having it being Hamada, standing it up, and assessing its value. We can assess its value after it's dead, and then we can redeem it. So that's why in this case, by the Parah Adumah that died, or a Shechta, that we are allowed to redeem it. Where it says, Rabbi Shimon, you want to suggest Rabbi Shimon's the author of this Tosefta, Ema Sefer, what are you going to do the second half of this Tosefta? Why? Shechta Agabe Marachta. If he shechs it on the pyre, the meaning that right before they're going to burn it, he shechs it over there, Ein La P'diyah Olomit. We said before that you're not allowed to redeem it at that point in time. Rashi said before, even though technically you could redeem it, but we don't do it because Gnai Hulo, that it's not appropriate, it's not respectful at that point in time when it's all been done properly, that you want to redeem the animal in such a late stage of the process. But if you say that, that is not the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Why? Vatanya, we have a bright so Rabbi Shimon Omer, para mitama tumat ochlim. When it comes to a para aduma, it's matamei tumat ochlim. Now the din of tumat ochlim is something that can become tamei because it's classified as an ochel, and then it can pass on that tuma as well based on the size from the ochel. Now something can only be an ochel if it's edible or can be eaten. For that reason, something that's osur behana'ah, something that is not allowed to be eaten, therefore, it does not have tumat ochlim because it can't be eaten. You only have something that is allowed to be eaten. Something that you could eat is something that can have tumat ochlim. So over here, you have a case, paraduma. Some paraduma shouldn't have tumat ochlim because after you shecht it, it becomes asur bano. You can't use it anymore. It has to be used for the paraduma. It's not made for people to eat or to be taken at all. Now, Rabbi Shimon says, no, but paraduma does have tumat ochlim. Why? They had a point in time where it could have been edible. Wait a minute, when could the paraduma have been edible? So Amar Reish Lakish explains to us, Omer Ayi Rabbi Shimon, para niftet agav marachta. When it comes to a paraduma, it can be redeemed agav marachta. It can be redeemed right at the pyre. Now let's understand this. Rabbi Shimon believes that you can redeem the paraduma up to the last moment. Even after it's been shechted on its pyre, at that moment in time, you can still redeem it. Well, since you could redeem it, that means that it has a possibility of being an ochel. All right, if you decide to leave it and use it as a paraduma, it won't be ochel. But since it had the possibility of being an ochel, that's enough to allow it to have a shem ochel. As a shem ochel, can be mitamei tumat ochlim. But what do you see from this? You see from this that Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that even when the paraduma shechted on its pyre, it is still redeemable. That goes against the Tosefta that we had before. So you're trying to suggest that Rabbi Shimon's the author of that Tosefta. Rabbi Shimon's of a different opinion. Rabbi Shimon says that even when you reach the point of the Maracha, you can still redeem it. How do I know that he says that? Because he says the paraduma can be tamei tumat ochlim. Well, how could it ever be tamei tumat ochlim? It was never an ochel. Rabbi Shimon says there is a point in ochel. After you shechted it and you were about to put it and burn it to make it into the ashes for the paraduma, at that point in time you have a decision to make. I could redeem it. If I do redeem it, then it becomes ochel, and therefore it could be a tamei tumat ochlim. If I decide against it, then in the end, what happens? I go and make it into a paraduma, and it can still be a tamei tumat ochlim, because it had a shat kosher, had a possibility of being ochel. And Rashi points out that Rabbi Shimon believes, kol omed liftot kipodui dami. Anything that is could be redeemed is if redeemed. So we look at it here at the paraduma as if redeemed. And if you look at it as if redeemed, that means that this item is ochel. Since it could have been ochel, and we could have had that possibility as if we did it, then it is ochel. Even though in the end we use it for the para aduma, nevertheless it has and can be an accept or can have tumat ochlim associated with it. But nevertheless, they see that Rav Shimon can't be the author of that breita from the Tosefta because that breita says that you cannot redeem it after it's shechted by the pyre. So now what are we going to do? Elashaini para ho v'damei yikarim. Alright, now let's not go down that route. We're going to have a different explanation for para aduma. Para aduma is kadosh b'kdushat haguf. So the answer in the end is what? That para aduma enoch nami is kadosh b'kdushat haguf. It's not frequent. So then why do we say late beit nimat elehem? The paraduma is an exception because damer yikarim, it's very expensive. It's a very valuable item. We know that because it was done so infrequently. It was so valuable that they paid large monies. The story of Dama ben Nisina in Masechet Kedushim about how much money they were willing to pay for a paraduma. Nevertheless, we say over here that even though it's Kadosh Kedush HaGdov and Lo Shriche, they are Levnei Beitin Matne Alehem. So now, we are at the point here where we now understand the position of Rabbi Yochanan, the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Lev Beitin Matne Alehem. When it comes to something that's Kadosh Kedush HaGdov, Beitin makes a t'nai that in situations where this frequently happens or something that's purchased on a regular basis, Beit Din makes a t'nai that whatever is in excess will be for Kedushat Damim, whatever is used will be Kedushat HaGuf. The exceptions to those rules are, number one, the Par and Seir Shel Yom HaKippurim and the Seir Avodah Zarah, because, number one, they are infrequent, or they're getting losses an infrequent occurrence. Rashi says, because the monetary value is insignificant. Tosus, on the other hand, maybe says, because they happen infrequently. It only happens once a year, therefore it's infrequent. Bezin doesn't really think about it. So there's no Lei Beit Nimat Nehem. Paraduma is also infrequent, but there Bezin pays attention because the value is so great. Tamar Mar Meito Tifteh. And if it dies, you can redeem it. Since when do we redeem kodshim in order to feed them to animals? Over here it died. If it dies, it's an avela. What's the value of redeeming such a behema? The only value of redeeming such a behema is to give it as dog food. That's a denigration of kodshim to do such a thing. Therefore, we will not redeem it in order to give it to the dogs. Yet you're saying over here by the paraduma, you're allowed to redeem it even after the point in time, or even at the point in time where it's in the Vela. So what are you talking about? Lev Beit Neman Elehem. We have this whole condition, or inherent condition, built in by Beis Din that you're allowed to redeem it. You're redeeming it in a situation where all you're going to do with it is hand it over to the dogs. And we don't do that by Kodshim. You said that Paraduma is Kadosh Kedusha Deguf. Therefore, the redemption of it is only going to be valuable for feeding dogs. And we don't do that. I remember Sharshi, you know, there's something that is valuable that can be used, and that's the Ora. So that the skin of the paraduma, when it comes to the skin of the paraduma, it's not a problem because its usage is not for eating, and therefore you could use it to redeem the paraduma because you can use the skin. So Beis Din is going to go out of its way to make such a condition just to protect the skin of the paraduma, meaning that you're going to lose the rest of the paraduma because it's an avela and we don't redeem it for klavim. But we're going to make a condition just to make sure that we can still use the skin. That's the common expression of my people. Then when it comes to an expensive item, right, anything that's left over, if we can salvage any part of that item, it's worthwhile to us.
Just like people say that by an expensive animal like a camel, let's at least salvage its ear, sell its ear for some value.
So since you can salvage the item over here, we're going to do that even though, again, it's a small portion of the total value of the animal. Nevertheless, we want to keep something from it, and therefore we will keep its value. Etevei. Amar lo Rabbi Shimon. So here's the question from our Mishnah. They said to Rabbi Shimon, Mahu shikarvu ze baze. What's the din of bringing the sirei musafim from one to the other? Meaning that Rabbi Shimon believes that there's a different kapara that is found for the musir musachatat musaf of Rosh Chodesh, of the sirei meragalim and the sirei chitzon and Yom Kippurim. So they asked him in the Mishnah, are you allowed to use, if for some reason it wasn't brought in Rosh Chodesh, are you allowed to use it on the regalim? If it wasn't brought in the regalim, can you use it for Rosh Chodesh? And Rabbi Shimon says, Eino chanami, you can do this. So he says, why? They said, how could you exchange them if they don't do the same thing? They don't function in the same way. You're saying that each seir has a different kapara. How is it that you're allowed to bring or exchange them one for the other? You're right. I believe that each one does a separate kapara, but that's only in its individual sense. In a categorical sense, they all provide the same kapara, and that is the kapara of Mikdash Ukdashav. And since it provides such a kapara for Mikdash Ukdashav, therefore they are considered one unit or one exchangeable in that manner. Vamai. Why did Rabbi Shimon give that answer? Lema lev beitnin matna lehen. Now, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that when it comes to karbonot that are purchased for the tzibur, in frequent cases, So over here we have frequent cases, Rosh Chodesh and the Regalim, things that happen on an accruing basis, things that are not unusual or unusual circumstances, and maybe even the Seir HaChitzon on Yom Kippur will be considered something that is normal. Why? Because when it comes to the Seir HaPnimi on Yom Kippur, that's something that happens once a year, and it's the only time something is brought bipnim. Aside from the Par and the Seir HaVodazara, nothing goes in bipnim, therefore it's unusual. The Seir HaChitzon, even though it happens once a year on Yom Kippur, nevertheless, it happens in the same place, where the Mizbeach, where all the other Seirim are brought, so maybe Beis Din even there has their Lev Beit Nimatan Elohim. The basic question to Rabbi Shimon is, I have a much better answer than saying, they all are under the same category. The answer should have been, Lev Beit Din Matan Elohim. If they're not used for this regular, they can be used for the next regular. If they're not used for this regular, they can be used for Rosh Chodesh. So if that's the case, right, why did Rabbi Shimon go out of his way to answer such a secondary or lesser quality answer, which is that they're all one category, when he could just said, there's no problem, Lev Beit Din Matan Elohim. Gemara says, that's not a question. Rabbi Shimon Kamar, you're talking about Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon Beit Din Matan Elohim. Shimon doesn't believe in this concept of Lev Beit Din Matan Elohim. So now we've gotten to the point where we say, just modify what Rabbi Yochanan's statement was. Rabbi Yochanan says that Tmidim can be Niftim Tmimim. When it comes to Tmidim, you're allowed to redeem them even when they have no mum in them. So that is only true according to the Data Rabbonon. That's only true according to Rabbonon. But Rabbi Shimon disagrees. So we've qualified that statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Da'amar Rabbi Yidi Bar'avin Amar Rav Amram Rabbi Yochanan Tmidim Shlo Hutzruchu Letzibor to excess Tmidim. The Divrei Rabbi Shimon ain niftim tmimim. When it comes to Rabbi Shimon, you're allowed to redeem them. The Divrei Chachamim niftim tmimim. But the Chachamim believe you can't be podedem tmimim. So Gemara says, Rabbonon depligei leid Rabbi Shimon manin hu. Where are these Rabbonon that argue on him? Inei Rabbonon diktoret. What do you want to say? We saw about the Braisa and the Mishnayot by Ketoret that explained to us when it comes to the excess Ketoret, you're allowed to redeem it. Maybe those are the ones that say it. Gemara says, Shani Ketoret, lo bar ri'iyahi. Maybe by Ketoret, it's an exceptional case. Why isn't it an exceptional case? Because what are the options? You know, when it comes to an animal that is tamim, animal that's brought in the Mizbeach, and you want to redeem it, we can wait until it gets a mum. We can wait until it gets a blemish, and it's no longer ra'oi, no longer usable for the Mizbeach, and then we can redeem it. But by Ketoret, what can you say? Ketoret doesn't have this concept of blemish. Doesn't have this concept of problem. So what are you going to do? You have Ketoret that's in excess and you want to redeem it. So maybe that's an exceptional case. And the Rabbanan over there made an exception that allowed you to redeem the Ketoret because there's no other way to deal with it. But maybe by Karbanot, by animals, they would agree with Rabbi Shimon and say, Leib Beitin is not Matalehem because we could just wait until they get a blemish. Like Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Lazar said before, when it came to the seer of Yom Kippurim, they say, wait until it gets a blemish and then redeem it. So maybe the Chachamim would agree. So Gemara says, all right, El Rabbonon de Para. Maybe it's the Rabbonon of this Para that we just saw over here, that you're allowed to redeem the Para. Because Lev Beit Din Matale, even though if it dies, even if it's shechted, it will allow you to redeem it. So Gemara says, Dilma Shani Para, the Dame Yokarim. There's something unique about a Para. Maybe we say Lev Beit Matin Elohim, because over there the Para is worth so much money, therefore we redeem the Para. We allow you to redeem the Para. There's a Lev Beit Din Matin Elohim. But we would not say that, again, about regular Karbanot. By regular Karbanot, we'd say either no ptiyah, or we'd say wait until they get a blemish and then redeem them. The Rabbanon of our Mishnah here in Shavuot. The Rabbanon asked Rabbi Shimon, listen, Rabbi Shimon, how do you allow the Sirei Chatat to be exchanged over here? Why? Because who says? The Gemara says, wait a minute. How do you know who's asking the question? There are two possibilities asking the question in the Mishnah. We have Rabbi Shimon's opinion. We also have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir who argue on him. So now, if you say that it's Rabbi Yehuda who's asking the question, then you could say Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Why? So Gemara says, Mimai, the Rabbi Yehuda, how do you know that Rabbi Yehuda's the one posing the question? V'hachi kamarle, and this is what he's saying to him. Bishlam adididi, according to me, even though I say that the Seirim function for different kaparot, right? Nevertheless, amino le beit dimatalein. I say Beis Din makes that condition. And therefore, if they are not used for their purpose, they can be given for another purpose. According to you, Rabbi Shimon, that you say Beis Din can't be matnei, why can they be brought for other purposes? So if you say Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the question, then in Ochanami we could learn from our Mishnah that Rabbi Shimon is the one who says, and Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says, and that's why he's posing the question to Rabbi Shimon. He says, even though you, Rabbi Shimon, and I have the same opinion that the Seirim, not exactly the same opinion, but we have the same opinion that the Seirim do or function for different kaparot, nevertheless, I can say that they can be used or interchanged because I have Lev Beit Din Matan Elohim. But you don't have Lev Beit Din Matan Elohim. But maybe the question over here is not Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Meir. Dilma Rabbi Meir, maybe the question of Rabbi Shimon is Rabbi Meir, v'hachi kamar. And the question would have been equally valid towards Rabbi Yehuda. V'hachi kamar le, bishmal didi damina kol sirim kaparatan shaveh. I would say that all the sirim do the same thing. They are mechaper on the exact same thing. Shachachi yikrivu. Therefore, they can be brought on the mizbeach or exchanged or used one for the other. Al didach, amay yikrivu. But when it comes to you, it thinks they all function differently. Why can they be on the mizbeach? So we have no proof from here that the Amrulo, the people who are questioning Rabbi Shimon, really hold of Le Beitnim Matnei Alehem. That would only be true if Rabbi Yehuda is the questioner. But maybe Rabbi Meir is the questioner in our Mishnah. And if Rabbi Meir is the questioner in our Mishnah, then you don't have any proof from that, because Rabbi Meir's reason he believes they can all be brought is because they all do the same thing. Ela Rabbi Yochanan Gemara Gemirila, that he had a misora. The Dibur Rabbi Shimon Einiftim, the Chavechamim Niftim. That is the misora that Rabbi Yochanan had when he made a statement that it's true for the Rabbanan and not true for Rabbi Shimon. What exactly comes in the misora? You could say both items. That the misora to Rabbi Yochanan was this, that when it comes to this idea that when there is a tmimim, excess kochim that are tmimim that leave Beit Nimat Alehen, that's true according to the position of the Chachamim, not true according to the position of Rabbi Shimon. And that's the whole Misora. Everything was given to Misora. Tosis over here, Tosis a little further on, suggests the possibility that Rabbi Shimon's reasoning is not Beit Misora, it's only the Chachamim. That Rabbi Yochanan's position that the Chachamim can say leave Beit Nimat Alehen, that was the Misora that he had. Once we know that Misora, then we can infer from that Rabbi Shimon's opinion in our Mishnah is such. Why? Because if Rabbi Shimon believes like the Chachamim that you're allowed to be put Nifdeh, then that's what he should have answered in the Mishnah. When he doesn't respond, he could have said in the Mishnah, Lei Beit Nin Matne Aleim. The fact that he doesn't give that response, and he gives a subpar response, something that would have been a less convincing answer, which is that, okay, they're all in one category, therefore they can be exchanged. He could have just said, Lei Beit Nin Matne Aleim. The fact that he doesn't say that makes it that we can infer from this that Rabbi Shimon does not hold of Lei Beit Nin Matne Aleim. So once we know through the Misora, once we have a Misora that the Chachamim do believe in it, then we can say, or we can infer that Rabbi Shimon's answer, even if he's answering Rabbi Meir, he should have answered, listen, Lei Beit Nin Matne Aleim. The fact that doesn't answer that shows you that Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold that. And since we know that Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold that, we don't need a Masorah for that, we just need a Masorah for the position of the Chachamim. But either way, now, we have a start out at Gemara with a statement by Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Ulam Rabbi Yochanan Tmidim Shalot Shukhul Tzibor Niftim Tmimim. Now we know that position only belongs to the Chachamim and not to Rabbi Shimon. And then on top of that, we also have other qualifications about that statement. Number one, that Lei Beit Nimat Alehem only applies to cases which are frequent and expensive. Frequent means that they happen on a recurring basis, or they happen often enough that Beis Din pays attention to them. And number two, it's very expensive, like the Parah Aduma. The cases like the Seir of Yom Kippur, and the Parim of Yom Kippur, and the Seir of Avodah Zarah, they're Beis Din didn't pay attention because they are both infrequent. They don't happen so commonly. And number two is that they're not so significant. And since they're not so significant monetarily, Beis Din didn't make a condition in those situations. Rabbi Shimon does not hold of this whole concept of Lev Beit Nin Matne Alehem, and therefore in our Mishnah he has to give an alternative answer, which is that they are all in the same category. Siri Chatat are all in the same category, and therefore they can be interchanged, not because of Lev Beit Nin Matne Alehem. Okay, we'll stop over here.